You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, back into the regular session, the regular style, the regular way that we do things at Punk News, which is three hosts, three tunes, and a lot of basic speculation. This is features editor John Gentile, and I'm kind of in like the pro mode right now. I'm just rolling along, no breaks, no ums, speeding along, just talking to you as if I'm in total control of the situation, which I am, because it's the Punk News Podcast, and we've done this almost, actually we've done it more than 700 times. We've actually probably done about 760, 770 times, because there's many point episodes, 0.9, 0.99, 0.999, and so forth. And we are rapidly approaching episode 700. We are here with co-editor Sam, co-editor M, M and Sam, Sam and M. What should we do for 700? I'm feeling like it's time for another call-in episode, but we could do a call-in episode. We could have, you know, just one big interview with some important person. We could do a game show again. What are you guys thinking for 700? We could do a fictional story like we've done before. But I'm feeling call-in. What are you guys thinking for episode 700?
Well, if you're feeling calling, then I guess we'll do that, because we haven't done it in a while.
Yeah, we haven't.
Yeah, that would be fun. I'm up for calling.
We used to do it on Skype, and what I liked about doing it on Skype is we would actually use the Skype's telephone function and actually call people through Skype, and like you would hear the phone ringing, and sometimes people wouldn't answer, which always added a bit of suspense and silliness. And you know, I mean, that was like 2020, 2021, and before, and long after, you know, ringing phones were kind of no longer a thing. So now we record things on Zoom. Is it as thrilling to have someone just sign in as it is to have the phone ring and have someone pick up and then get that slightly distorted voice that you get with the telephone, if you know what I'm saying?
We could find an effect on the internet and put it over it.
We could
do like a soundboard thing.
So it seems like you two are thinking call-in episodes. Is that what you guys are thinking?
Sure.
I think that's a consensus at this point, eh?
Hmm. Well, then start thinking about who we want to have on. That's good. That's easier to edit than some of the other things. But also, it is cool to have like 15, 20 people on one episode. So think about and also what I love about the call-in episodes is sometimes people don't show up, which I think adds to the suspense and fun, frankly. There was one year where the last person didn't show up. Do you guys remember who that was?
Nope. Hmm. Wait, hold on. We're talking about 700 episodes. Do you know how much bandwidth that takes in one person's mind to figure out?
to figure out who didn't call in? And really, it's not even really 700. It's actually, I mean, all in all, it's probably close to 1,000, because we've got a lot of half episodes, and Moore's got a lot of her episodes. And plus, there was an entire year where it was like 499.9. 499.99. That was almost, it was like 6 months. So we've got a lot of episodes. In a way, I'm sorry we haven't kept actual count of the number of episodes that we have. But in a way, there's so many, who really cares, you know?
We should go and count them all.
Well, I'm not sure we can. I mean, we can get a very close approximation. I think like the first 40 or 50 are lost, frankly.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. No.
We don't have everything.
I mean, that was before my time. Even that was when it was Chris Moran, Rich Verducci, and Brian Yancey, or even Rich Verducci, Yancey, or Moran and Brian Schultz, I think sometimes. And Kira was on back in the day. I mean, that's how long ago that was, Sam. And who else? Of course, Brittany Strummer used to be on a lot. Who else, Sam? Who else used to be on?
I think that's it. Like, there, you know, that the Orcor crew, that crew was always on it. I know I used to get roped in somehow sometimes for various weird things when I joined up. And you know, I guess I became a semi-regular enough where maybe you know what my voice sounds like. I don't know. It would be really, really creepy that like someone uses our voice on via like an AI generator. But whatever.
And then we'll get to the show proper in a hot second. But I do love, and also I cringe at some of those old episodes. I mean, it was funny then, you know, when we were like 26 or 27 or 25, like some of the wacky things we would do. But now me looking back, I'm like, ugh, you know. But what's always funny is like for the first like 30 or 40 or 50 episodes, it's like the Ergs have announced a new tour. Rich, what do you think? I like the Ergs. Brian, what do you think? The Ergs are cool. Adam, what do you think? I agree. I like the Ergs. And our next story is Hot Water Music has released a new album. Rich, what do you think? I like it. It was very mechanical, you know.
Well, it was also like early stages of podcasting anyway, so.
Actually,
Oh, true.
you have to give credit to Rich Verducci and Sound Guy Nariman, which a lot of listeners probably have no idea who that is. Rich actually was doing podcasts before podcasts even existed. The Punk News podcast came out of Sound Scene Revolution, which was Rich's website where he would interview bands and put the MP3s up on his website. And then I think it was Sound Guy Nariman and maybe Chris Moran to have the idea to make it a quote podcast and have it a regular thing at Punk News. And that was before podcasts were even a thing for real, which is kind of cool, really.
Exactly, my point.
Yeah. Punk News kicked off the podcast craze.
We've been doing it now. We've been podcasting now maybe almost 15 years. It's crazy. It's crazy. More than
That is
15 years.
nuts.
That is nuts.
It is.
Really, Punk News is one of the I mean, I'm sure there's longer running ones, but Punk News is without question one of the longest running podcasts. It really is. I mean, we're definitely the top 1% of long running podcasts because we've been doing it for 15 years and have never missed a single week, which is pretty rad.
That's so cool. I'm Googling longest running podcast.
This
Well,
is
enough
like
pat.
stats that like should be memorialized in some kind of internet something.
Oh, we're older
Indeed.
than. I think we're older than a lot of these. We need to set the record straight.
Well, there's a lot happening at Punk News on February 15. Free Joe Jack Talcum show at Animated Brewing in Dual. Somewhere outside Philadelphia. Just Google Animated Brewing, Downingtown or sort of around there. Free Joe Jack Talcum show. Plus Pat and Michael of All Else Failed are each doing a solo set, so that's going to be real cool. Also, I didn't even know this. I wish I'd known this when we announced it. It's actually Joe Jack Talcum's hometown, where he literally grew up with Rodney of the Dead Milkmen. So that's kind of cool. February 22nd is the Philly Record Freakout in Philadelphia at Philomoka off Spring Garden and 12th Street, I think. So we're gonna have over 20,000 records for sale. That's gonna be a lot of fun. And more, just did another episode of And More Tells You What to Listen To. I just interviewed Vic Bondi of Articles of Faith and his new band Red Shift, and that was a really good conversation. So that's up right now. Next week we've got Jeffrey Lewis on. That's gonna be a lot of fun. And so yeah, man, a lot of cool things happening in the punk news. Oh, one other thing, then we will get started. We need to start thinking about April Fools because it's always a mad rush.
Oh,
And last year we almost got sued because it was
yeah.
a mad rush. And I'm glad we almost got sued. It was rad. But we should start. I think we should do something unique this year. So we definitely let's spend the month of February thinking about what we want to do for April Fools. And so we hit the ground running when it comes to playing April Fools. In the meantime, let's play a song. Actually, Sam, tell us about the festival you went to, and then we'll play a song, and then we'll come back and hit the news proper.
Oh my. Okay, so I am so tired, you guys. I went up to Boston this weekend and
Austin.
Boston, yeah.
Austin.
Got a lot of seafood stuff ingested in me, which is good, and Boston cream pies, which is fantastic. If you like that stuff. But I was really there to go see this festival called Something in the Way. Apparently, Run for Cover Records, must have turned 20 this year. And they teamed up with Bowery Presents, which is like kind of like a venue slash promotion thing in the on the East Coast. I think it's like, you know, Boston, New York, Philly. I think they do Philly things. So basically they threw an entire weekend party and I was there for some of it. It was fantastic. It was at this place called Roadrunner. It seemed new. I'm not from Boston. I don't go to Boston ever. So I have no idea how old this venue is, but what they did was they had two stages, the main stage and then a backstage, pretty much a platform that they put in the back of the venue. And the soundboard was in the middle of the pit where normally you would have a pit area. So pretty much you would pivot back and forth to see bands because essentially it was a tight turnaround for most of it. So pretty much I saw a whole bunch of bands, including Balance Composure, Sakurami, American Football, Anxious, MS Paint, Slow Dive, Fiddlehead, Mannequin Pussy. Mannequin Pussy was amazing, by the way. One Step Closer, Military Gun. I think we're going to talk about Military Gun soon, maybe. I don't know. But regardless, it was a damn blast. I actually have not, I've seen a lot of these bands. There was tons more. I am too old to be standing around for 10 million hours because most of these sets, I think the thing starts at like 1:30 and ended around 10:30. So Sam wasn't standing around for, what is that, 9 hours? That's like a full day's work of standing. That's crazy. Anyways, but yeah, Mannequin Pussy was great. They killed it. I think I've only seen them once before, and it was like a million years ago. So seeing them now with the new record was amazing. The backstage, a couple bands like Fiddlehead, One Step Closer, Anxious, all played in the backstage. There was no barricade, so pretty much it was kids jumping on top of the stage and off the stage nonstop. It looks like
Oh, yeah.
salmon going up the river, like when they're spawning season. It was fun to watch. Not fun if you landed on me, so because I am old. Yeah, I hope they do it again next year. I don't know. You guys like would you like be okay standing for 9 hours to watch bands?
You know, it depends. If you're just standing there, like, well, first of all, is it inside or outside? And it depends how compelling it is. If it's compelling and you're not on asphalt, and it's not too jam-packed, then yeah, I can swing out 9 hours. But if it's boring, you honestly, you kind of just stand there and get bored and your feet hurt and so forth. So it really depends on the band and how exciting it is. But I will say 9 hours, that's a lot. That's a long time to be watching bands for sure.
Yeah, I think like a recommendation I have for everyone is get insoles, you guys. I don't care if you're wearing like really disgusting crusty Vans or Chucks. Get insoles for those things. Like especially if you're going to like something like this and like hanging out. Plus the other thing, Boston, I don't understand you guys and get being used to 10-degree weather. I'm not sure if you guys deal with that up there in where you're part like your parts of Canada, but it was like literally 10 degrees. And
What is that in Celsius?
have to look it up. Oh my God.
Is currently minus 20 Celsius here without the wind chill.
Let's see. That is minus 12 Celsius.
Ooh, yeah,
Yeah.
it's cold.
Yeah, so pretty much it was 10 degrees outside and I can see ghosts coming out of my mouth when I'm outside. And I think like one of the days I like left the venue and was trying to walk to the car. And a 40 mile per hour gust of wind hit us with possibly 8 degree weather. I almost felt like my soul left my body because it was so cold.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm not made for Boston, you guys. I'm actually not made for the cold. yeah, regardless of that, I had fun.
Well, they have it. Sam had fun. And if there's
Right.
anything that's important in life, it's Sam having fun, which I 100% endorse and approve of. Here's a song,
Yeah.
and we'll be back, and we're going to talk about some news. Suck is a band from Germany. I like them a lot. They've been around a little while now. They got a new EP coming out. This is off the new EP, and it's called Gimme Gabba Gabba. Talk about some news. Black Sabbath, they're reuniting and breaking up all on the same day. It's called Black Sabbath Back to the Beginning. It's going to be the original Black Sabbath: Geezer Butler, Tony Iommi, Ozzy Osbourne, and Bill Ward. Of course, as the listeners surely know, when Black Sabbath reunited last time, they did so without Bill Ward, and Sharon Osbourne was a total piece of work about it, and Ozzy too. And they're like, we don't think Bill's up to it. We're only looking out for Bill. And the reality was, is they offered Bill a tiny cut of what he was supposed to get. So in true Ozzy fashion, they outmaneuvered him money-wise and really cut his throat and were pieces of shit to him. And it didn't affect them monetarily, not one iota. So from a business standpoint, it made sense. But from a musical art and general humanity standpoint, it was a very nasty thing to do. Well, they are finally giving Bill Ward his due respect, I guess. And so it's going to be Geezer, Tony, Ozzy, and Bill all playing together for one final show. I don't know if anybody has played more final shows than Ozzy. This has got to be about his 25th final show. But that being said, it's nice that Bill Ward's getting up there. So it's going to be Black Sabbath and also like an Ozzy solo set. I don't know. Does that mean Black Sabbath's only going to play for like three or four songs? Or what does that mean? I don't know. Also, Metallica, Slayer, Pantera, Gojira, Alice in Chains, Hailstorm, who is huge, and I don't understand how. I never heard of Hailstorm until they opened for Alice Cooper, and now they're probably even bigger than Alice Cooper, and they're like a huge band. I never even heard of this band, but until then, Lamb of God, Anthrax, Mastodon, and also there's a bunch of solo acts or whatever, and I it appears that they're just gonna like maybe join like a backing band on stage and play a song or two, but it's unclear. It's gonna be Billy Corgan, David of Disturbed, Duff, Fred Durst, Lizzie Hale, Jakey Lee. Oh, that's kind of cool. Jakey Lee, the old Ozzy Osbourne band. Jonathan Davis of Korn, KK Downing of Judas Priest. And well, not no longer Judas Priest. Interesting that he's going to be there, and real Judas Priest isn't going to be. That's kind of surprising. Mike Borden of Faith No More, the singer of Ghost. Rudy Sarzo, of course, also of the Ozzy Osbourne band. Sammy Hagar, Slash, Tom Morello, who looks like he's organizing the thing in general, and Wolfgang Van Halen. The proceeds are going to It says the proceeds are going to be split between Cure Parkinson's and the Birmingham Children's Hospital and Acorns Children's Hospice, which that's nice. Is all the proceeds? And well, I've got sort of a negative comment about that, but we'll get to that in a second. At any rate, do you guys think this is going to be the final ever, truly ever Black Sabbath show? Do you guys think that it's going to be good? And do you think Ozzy and Sharon, but of course Sharon works for Ozzy, has Ozzy basically created the trick of basically escaping any responsibility or accountability for bullshit actions for his entire career? And how did he do it? M, what do you think?
About the show or about the Ozzy question?
About all the questions.
I think it's really kind of funny that it's, hey, Bill, you're back in the band. You're back in the band for one night. Bye, Bill. Like, again, I think he should have been included on their, like, last final tour.
They really did treat Bill Ward very poorly. They really did.
That wasn't cool. But again, it's good that he's here. Do I think this is going to be the final show? No, I really don't. I think they're going to go until they can't anymore. Like, in whatever that means, like, they've turned to dust, you know, they're not playing anymore. I think that's kind of how things are going to go. I think we're going to see a couple more final shows, and stuff. But again, you never know. They're all getting up there. They all have some health issues or the other. So this could very well be the final show. There's a lot of people on the bill, too, that I was pretty surprised about. So it seems more like it's an Ozfest kind of deal.
Yeah, it does.
I also have no idea why Pantera is playing this. That's just my opinion. I don't think they should be booking. No one should be kind of adding them. Like, it just seems weird.
Well, I mean, the reason they're playing it is because Sharon is very good friends with the Pantera guys. And I'm not saying that she's right for booking them. I mean, they're kind of creeps. But you said, why are they? That's why.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. As to the proceeds, the information that I saw about this, it didn't say if it was 100% or 50% or what the split was. It just said proceeds will be split. So whenever there's something like that, yeah. So again, it might be out there. I didn't see it on the research I did for this story.
The thing with this is when they say proceeds will be split, and I wouldn't put anything past Sharon, but so here's a common trick in this or any kind of scenario is, so who's the operating company that's actually throwing the festival? The operating company is probably a company owned by Sharon and Ozzy or anything under that umbrella, right? So that operating company gets paid, but none of the artists get paid. You see what I'm saying? And that's how you pull the trick.
Oh.
That way you can say like, oh, we're doing it for charity. We're making $10 million through our operating company, but Black Sabbath is doing it for charity. You see? And I'm not saying that she is doing that, but listen, I wouldn't put anything past Sharon and Ozzy because they've proven time and time again they do a lot of crappy stuff.
Hopefully this isn't that.
Yeah, hopefully. But
you never know.
Sam, are you going to fly out for this?
Absolutely not. No, I think this is weird. like, there's just a lot happening. I hope this is, like, it's one day, right?
Yeah, like, it's only one day.
I don't understand how this is one day. Unless, like, all of the lesser people, like, you know, they have, like, 15-minute sets, and then the solo artist is like literally just gonna do like two songs and then be like, bye. Like if this was like a television show or something. I also would not be shocked if this turned into some kind of like, we're putting this on the TV and or like, on Netflix and you have to pay extra for it or whatever for the last show, type of situation. Because there's just like too many names on this. Like, really? Fred Durst? Really? Why?
They
Like,
want to break stuff.
yeah, exactly. Clearly, we it, that, like Jonathan Davis? What? And then how does Sleep Token even get in this? I don't even know. Yeah, so I don't know about this. As for the question of the final show, I kind of want to know like who owns, I guess, like Black Sabbath.
I
Like,
know
is
the
it?
exact answer. I know
Oh
the exact
yeah?
answer.
What is it?
So yet another example of Sharon and Ozzy's shittiness. Ozzy was fired from Black Sabbath in 1980. Afterwards, he went on to form Ozzy, which actually was massively big and frankly was much bigger than the band Black Sabbath with Dio and then later on with Tony Martin and so forth. And so at the time, the Black Sabbath trademark, I believe, was owned by Tony Iommi, which I don't know if that means the Black Sabbath Corporation was owned by Tony Iommi, but I believe that actually it was. Then in the early 2000s, Tony Iommi was diagnosed with cancer. And like a few weeks after he was diagnosed with cancer, and after Ozzy's name had declined, because although the Osbourne Show, what was the name of the Osbourne Show?
The
I think it's called the
Osbournes.
Osbournes, yeah. And I used to watch it.
So that really raised Ozzy's fame level, but then after a while it kind of backfired isn't the right word, but burnout. And Ozzy was seen as a joke and a has-been, and he wasn't selling tickets like he used to because people were Osborned out. And so after Tony Iommi was diagnosed with cancer, then Sharon Osbourne and Ozzy sued Tony Iommi for co-ownership of the Black Sabbath trademark. The hilarious thing being in their complaint, it literally says that all four members form Black Sabbath, and they're each owners of the Black Sabbath trademark, and therefore Ozzy should get 50% of the Black Sabbath trademark because it was founded by all four equally, which makes a lot of sense. And I was a little frustrated that Tony Iommi settled the case, and so I'm sure Ozzy has some sort of a piece, but I just thought it was total bullshit. So the answer is the Black Sabbath name is owned by at least Tony Iommi and Ozzy Osbourne, but the other two, and actually Bill Ward probably is not a co-owner because he got cut out. And so maybe Geezer Butler has a piece, but the point being is Black Sabbath is at least owned by Tony Iommi and Ozzy.
So basically, what you're telling me is, and this is what Sam thinks, as soon as Ozzy passes, essentially there will be no Black Sabbath. Because, like, honestly, I was like, if Black Sabbath is gonna be making them, like, Ozzy Osbourne money for the future, I'm sure if everyone else goes, he's gonna find a backing band and figure it out.
Well, there actually was a Black Sabbath without Ozzy, but it wasn't. And this is to your point, there was heaven and hell. After Black Sabbath reunited for the first time, they fought again and then they linked back up with Dio, but they couldn't go out on tours Black Sabbath because Ozzy was now a co-owner. So it was heaven and hell. So, I just thought it was the scummiest thing ever that Sharon sued Tony Iommi after he announced that he had cancer. From a strategy standpoint, that's fantastic strategy. From a human standpoint, that's totally shitty. You know what I mean?
Well, if you watched the Osbourne, like you kind of like got a glimpse of like who was in the background pulling strings all the time, you know? And she's definitely like a smarty pants when it came to business things, you know? So hey, like
Well, I think Sharon Osbourne is a horrible person. I think she's
yeah.
incredibly conniving And so, I mean, she's extremely good at business. I think she's a horrible person. But that being said, people tend to protect Ozzy and beat up on Sharon. But the fact of the matter is, Sharon is hired by Ozzy. If Ozzy didn't want her to sue Tony Iommi when he had cancer, he could have said, "I'm the boss because I'm Ozzy, the artist. Don't sue my friend when he has cancer." So he, but he allowed it. So the point being is, people have to beat up on Sharon, and I think she's a shitty person. But Ozzy's equally, if not more shitty, because he let it go on when he was the person with the keys and control with those kinds of things. You know, you can't sue someone without your consent, without that person's consent, and he let it happen. So I think Ozzy's kind of a dirtbag in that fashion, you know, in a lot of fashions. That being said, here's the correct take. The correct take is, this is cool. It's nice that Bill Ward's getting the final Black Sabbath show. He's entitled to it. People are going to go and they're going to have fun. And some Black Sabbath's one of the greatest bands ever. And I hope people have fun. And I hope it's, you know, and I think it will have fun. I think the show is not going to be that great. Ozzy is in bad, bad shape, real bad shape. And I definitely do think it's the end of Black Sabbath for sure, because Ozzy is in terrible shape. And all the dudes are like 80 or something, or getting close there. You know what I mean? So I think it really is the end. I think it's cool they're doing a big wham bam kind of show. I think I would have picked some different acts. But then again, you know, as someone who has thrown shows 1/10,000th at the scale of this, I know that, you know, sometimes operational things come into play and you can't always get exactly what you want. Like, I think Judas Priest should be there. I think maybe Sleep should be there, you know. But you know, maybe it just didn't work out one reason or another. I think there's a lot of cheesy 90s bands here. Though those 90 bands were a staple of Ozfest. So maybe from a historical standpoint, it makes sense that they're there, like Disturbed or Fred Durst. And so, you know, I think it's nice Bill Ward's getting the final Black Sabbath show. I know he wanted it. And he's definitely going to be one of the better parts of it there for sure. But I think the show will, I think people will enjoy it and be quote blown away. But I think at the end of the day, it will be somewhat underwhelming as a performance. I think they're probably only going to play like five or six songs, frankly. I think we'll do like four or five Ozzy songs and like five or six Black Sabbath songs. So yeah, so that's my hot take on that. Post Malone is the Record Store Day ambassador. Sam, do you care? Are you in Record Store Day this year?
I probably will not be at Record Store Day this year unless I
Why
am
not?
in proximity. Because wait, like I don't think I found anything I really, really wanted. Like, plus the other thing is like everything is so inflated in prices.
True.
I don't even. I don't even know why Post Malone is the ambassador. Yeah, why? Don't know. I don't know. But I guess it's on brand for them, right? 'Cause like didn't they have like Taylor Swift one day
They
like
did,
there?
which I'm all
Yeah.
about. Well, go ahead. I'm all about Taylor Swift being an
Yeah,
ambassador. Go
no,
ahead,
like
Sam.
Taylor Swift kind of makes sense to me because she did the entire re-recording of everything so that she can take back her masters type of thing, right?
Yeah.
Which again makes total sense to me. But yeah, I'm not sure if like what Post Malone's like contribution to this is besides, you know, just him making records and people buying it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I haven't actively gone to a Record Store Day in a little bit now. If I was like I did grab a couple things from Record Store Day, like but not specifically for Record Store Day. Like I've just went to a record shop on Record Store Day because I was literally net near a record store, usually my favorite ones, and just grabbed vinyl, like you know, because it's gotten to a point where everything is just so inflated in price, and there's just so many copies of them floating around. The other thing is, there's a difference between Record Store Day First and Record Store Day Exclusive. So I don't tend to buy the Record Store Day First ones because first usually tells me that there's going to be subsequent pressings of it. At
Ah, but
eventually.
Sam, sometimes they say it's a Record Store Day first, but then the wide release never comes out. That's always the tricky part.
I know, but it's there's also tons of times where I've gone and looked for something and like found it, bought it, right? And then like a week later, the store still has it. I think the last record store day I actually grabbed so there's like electro pop band called the Veronicas from like a million years ago. They like pressed their first like album or second album, like the really popular album. So I made sure I went and got that because I really wanted it, and I didn't mind spending like $40 on it, you know. But yeah, support your local record store, even though it's not record store day. That's literally my thing these days. When I was in Boston, we went to Armageddon Records and spent some money there. I actually found a ridiculous, I'm not sure if you guys all know this, but we're me and my husband were New York Mets fans because we love punishment. We found the 1969 New York Mets like record in like a bin for $5, and it came back home to Brooklyn with us. I have no idea how it got to Boston, but now it's safely in my house in New York City. Yeah, Em, what is your take on record store day these days?
It's always fun, like talking with you guys about it, and like seeing what's on the lists and things, because there's always some weird, like soundtrack or like just weird thing. Yeah, I do not have a record player or a way to play records, so I just kind of observe from the sidelines and hear the stories and throw in my 2 cents. But yeah, I don't really see why it needs an ambassador because people are gonna go kind of regardless. Like the Taylor Swift thing, when that came out and we talked about it, it was like, well, she's getting younger people into records and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, that's totally fair and that's a valid point. I don't necessarily think Post Malone is doing the same thing. But I mean, I don't really know. Like, I know he put out a country album, but the only reason I knew that is because I watched the Grammys and it was like nominated for something. And if I hadn't watched the Grammys, I would have no idea he put out a country album.
Well, his face just looks like a sticker on everything right now.
He's everywhere.
It, apparently, if he's doing record store day ambassador and his face is in a weird circle.
Yeah. How do they like print his tattoos right though?
I think they're just blurry at this
Oh.
point. I don't know how high res of a photo you can get of his face, and make it really small for us to actually acknowledge what his tattoos all say. Well, my other thing about
Sure.
this is like the list isn't even out yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know.
But are you more excited about it now because of Post Malone?
No.
I
Absolutely
am. I can't
not.
wait for Christmas. Now that Post Malone has given me permission to enjoy records, I'm all about it. I feel like Post Malone was maybe 2 years ago, frankly. I'm not sure he's as hot as he was. If he gets people in the door to buy records, that's cool. I don't really care who the Record Store Day ambassador is. Like, I'm not getting hung up on that at all. I don't care. It's like I buy records every week, so I don't need Post Malone to tell me I can or cannot. Sam is totally right in that Record Store Day prices are crazy now. And the fact of the matter is, the vast majority of Record Store Day records now you can get online for like half the price, like 2 days after Record Store Day. It's not like it used to be back in the day where the things were ultra limited and they would skyrocket in price. But I'm probably gonna go to Record Store Day unless I got something else going on that day. I always think it's a lot of fun, but the prices are kind of crazy. And now, more than ever, when you're at Record Store Day, when they got like a single LP for like $45, you're like, do I really need to spend $45 on this? Or do I just want to risk it and wait 2 weeks and hope to pay like $18 on it? And most of the time, if you wait 2 weeks, then you can't pay for $18. Like, The record store gets plenty of my money. They don't need my money for Record Store Day itself. But that being said, on Pro Record Store Day, I think it's been lazy a couple of past couple of years. Like the things that come out have been kind of lazy. So I'm hoping they juice it back up, and I'm hoping that Post Malone is the guy to really, as the ambassador, say, listen, guys, my name is on Record Store Day now. It better be some real quality releases this time around. I'm not sure. Oh, go ahead.
You know who should be the ambassador?
Me.
Snoopy.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Actually, that's a good, like, what if they did do a fictional ambassador? That'd be actually kind of cool.
That's what I'm saying.
What does the ambassador even really do? I think the ambassador actually doesn't do anything. I just think they just say our ambassador is Post Malone, and that's all he does. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he actually does anything.
Like, this would totally be a different story if, like, Post Malone was going to show up at Record Store Day, like, at a record store. Maybe it's Amoeba in, like, you know, California, or maybe it's some, like, one of the record stores in his hometown, like, wherever he lives. That would be adorable, you know? But I would put money down to get Snoopy to be the ambassador, because Snoopy is always playing records in his in Charlie Brown's house. So go right ahead.
Sam, or... I think that's a real good idea. I think that's a genuinely really good idea, Sam.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Watch the next Record Store Day, not this April one. They're going to steal my idea and give me no credit for it. But you heard it here first. Sam said Snoopy.
Let's do one more story and then we'll play a song. Let's talk about, let's see here. I guess we'll talk about Punk Rock Bowling Club shows. Punk Rock Bowling has announced a few more club shows. Ceremony was kind of one of the bigger ones that just got announced. Actually, I'm pulling up the Punk Rock Bowling website right now, and I'm going to pull up the club show section as we speak. And the club shows are, let's see, the ones, damn it. Here we go, club shows. All right. So Dillinger 4 7 Seconds, Mariachi El Bronx, Age, Bottle Rocket, Strung Out. Those have all been announced. Here are the ones that have recently been announced. Linville Golding of the Specials. And he's actually going to be doing a Specials tribute with the Agrolites backing him. Toasters and Mephistopheles, cool. Kilograms and Calamatics are going to be there. New Bomb Turks with the Baboon Show and Civic got announced. Lee Fields, who's a soul singer with Shannon the Clams, got announced. And Ceremony with Angel Dust, Hammerhold, and Cosmic Joke also got announced. I'm you know, I gotta say, man, like, I'm digging Punk Rock Bowling this year, you know, Flag, Damned, Crazy in the Brains. But I'm not really quite sadly, I'm really not that blown away. The club shows, I'm really not blown away. I am psyched for the adverts, and then they announced Lee Fields. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool, man, Lee Fields. And of course, it's on the same at the exact same time as the adverts, which kind of bummed me out. And Ceremony's at the exact same time as that as well. So I guess I got to pick the adverts on that. I'll probably be going to see Linville Golding do all specials with the Agrolites backing, which is pretty cool. And I'll go to the Crazy the Brain show. So I got a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but I just wish. I don't know. I mean, the adverts is cool, but I do wish that I don't know, man. A little. I would say that Lee Fields is spicy. I mean, I always do like how when Sam, weren't you and I at the one in New Jersey where they had Charles Bradley and it was totally amazing?
Oh yeah, that was amazing. Yes,
that really was an amazing amazing set. I mean, it really was. It really he. That was a really cool set in that, like, he went in front of a punk audience and. Really, the Punk Rock Bowling audience is a very cliche punk audience. A lot of, you know, bondage pants, mohawks, you know, people dressing like it's England 1982, you know. Lee Fields comes out, and he doesn't try to be anything but – I mean, not Lee Fields. Charles Bradley comes out. He doesn't try to do anything but be him, and he does his soul. And actually, he even, like, talked a lot about religion, which in a punk scene you think would not go over that well, but people were really into it. And it was a really, really moving set. And then
– I think we were just respectful.
I liked at the very end, Em, do you remember – I mean, Em, Sam, at the very end, he's like, God made red flowers and yellow flowers and white flowers. And then he's like – and then the very last thing he said, and don't forget – the black flower. And like, that was the end of the set. I'm like, wow, I'm like, whoa, you know? And then I saw him on the boardwalk the next day in a full on suit, eating an ice cream cone, you know? I'm like, oh, I'm like, Charles Bradley, you were so awesome yesterday. And he goes, thank you. Like, all right. And I'm like, see you later. But that was an awesome set. Anyway, so I would have really liked to see Lee Fields, but I think between Lee Fields and the adverts, I think I gotta pick the adverts, sadly. Ceremony, I would like to see too, but listen, between Lee Fields and adverts and Ceremony, I've seen Ceremony. And the fact of the matter is Ceremony, they like to mix in their post-punk stuff with their hardcore. And it seems to me that they've never really figured out a way to really make those two genres fit together. And that they'll get juiced up for three songs and then cool it off. And they get juiced up for two songs and then cool it off. And to me, they've never really seemed to be able to really make that quite work. But maybe that's because I was at the Ceremony Road at R Park record release show, which was mind-blowing. That being said, I'm psyched for the adverts. I would have really liked to see Lee Fields. I would also like to see Shannon the Clams, but I won't because the Punk News Podcast has a beef against the Shannon the Clams band. And of course, Crazy in the Brains, but that's an early Friday show. So I got to say, I'm not blown away by these lineups, frankly. I mean, there's cool stuff there, and there's just enough to keep me interested, but I'm not blown away. M, how do you feel about these club shows and punk rock going lineup?
I think the lineup for the actual festival is pretty good. Like, there's some, like, a mix of kind of like older bands and like newer bands and lots of like really exciting stuff, like The Damned, Peter Hook and the Light, No Bro, Bad Waitress, like stuff like that. All really, really
Surfboard.
cool. Surfboard, yeah.
Oh, where's the Surfboard Club show, Em? Where is the Surfboard Club show? Where? Where?
If they announce it like tomorrow?
Then that'd be rad. Then actually, I would be incredibly psyched because I love Surfboard. I mean, I've seen them. I haven't seen them that many times. I've seen them. Actually, I don't think I've only seen them twice, maybe three times. But man, I love Surfboard. And there's, I saw them about 6 or 8 months ago. They are so good live. They're so good.
They should do a club show. That would be fun.
And I think we've
Yeah.
done this before. Em, who do you think the special secret guest is going to be? And then we'll let Sam guess as well. But Em, go ahead. Are you blown away by these club shows, or do you think these club shows are just okay? On a scale of A to F, Em,
AF.
what do you actually no, from F to A, we don't want to reference A to F at all. On a scale of F to A, where do you place these club shows as a whole, Em?
Ooh, as a whole, I think, there's some neat stuff, you know, there's some cool things, but I think I'd probably give it maybe a like C,
Yeah, I
B
agree. I
plus,
agree.
because
I
like
agree.
the Linville Golding thing's gonna be really cool, and yeah, just kind of like a handful of things that pop out, and then the rest are just like a show. All of the posters are really neat, though. I am enjoying, well, the majority of the posters. And special secret guest, I am sticking with Alice Bag.
Good guess. Sam, how do you feel about these as a whole, and who do you think the secret guest is going to be?
I think we discussed secret guest thing, and I'm still sticking with Frank Turner's hardcore band.
That's right. We had that exact discussion like 2 times ago, didn't we? That's right.
I think one, but it's fine. But yeah, no, I'm hoping that happens. I feel like that can happen. So I do think that these secret sh all these like, you know, club shows are maybe more geared towards the stuff that I listen to, versus the stuff that like you listen to or what is actually on Punk Rock Bowling, because like, you know, the D4 Dead to Me thing, right? I was like, that's totally up my alley. Like, I would totally see 7 Seconds. I love Mariachi El Bronx. They're just like, you know, fun. The Bottle Rocket Broadway Calls and Make War is definitely something I would normally do because I love Broadway Calls so much and they barely play. And then there's the Strung Out with Good Riddance, Last Gang. You know, that's pretty much, you know, fat stuff. That Argolite show, the Kilograms is playing it. That's gonna be so special because essentially that's a what is that's like a new band that has like, you know, Sammy Kaye in it, and what is his name? Mike McDermott. And one special guy from Boston's in it. So it's, that's going to be fun because they're essentially like a band that's like from all over the place, and I don't know if they like can get together a lot. So it seems like they've been playing a lot of like festivals or like big get-togethers of some sorts. Draculas is great. They're great people too, so that's also a thing that's happening. Yeah, and I would also give it a C. I think they could have done better, but I do think that, and the only reason why I think they could have done better is they did curate some of the shows very nicely, but they're clashing with each other too much, I think. So you're pretty much leading certain, I guess, ears to really make hard decisions on where they need to go. Like, it would totally be different if they, like, if you're into like fat wreck bands or like, the normal typical hardcore sound, that would be like every day there's like an hardcore band or hardcore sound like curated show happening, so it would be a no-brainer, but then again, I think like at this point I'm like really old. I just listen to a whole bunch of things. I listen to too many things apparently, where I'm still hanging out with 20 something year olds at festivals. That, yeah, clashes also happens at fest, so it's just a way of life now.
A lot of people actually are like really psyched. Like people are like freaking out on the Teenage Bottle Rocket show, and they're freaking out on the Dillinger Four show, and even the 7 Seconds Negative Approach show. None of those shows really interest me.
Well, John, you're very specific here,
I
and
am. I am.
I'm also very specific to potentially those human beings.
I will say, you know me, I always like the spiciness, and the Linville Golden Show is spicy because you guys know me, I love like one-off weirdo sets like Joe Jack Calcum doing All Ramones, Sturgeon backed by Crazy Brains. I love the interesting thing is Sam and M, from a sales standpoint, what do you think people would be more interested in? Let me think of a punk band that's like around like would people be more interested in a Descendants set or a Milo and Chuck Dukowski and Bill Stevenson and Dez Kadena cover the Sex Pistols? What would people be more interested in?
Oh.
Or we'll say the Clash. What would sell more? The Descendants doing a normal lineup or Milo backed with by some Black Flag guys doing all Clash? What would people be more interested in? One time and one time only, mind you.
One time only. I'm gonna say the Clash set.
What do you think, Sam?
Oh, you made this really hard. I would say the Clash set only because you'll get the convergence of the rabid Descendants fans and the pretty much like the flag like rabid fan base as well.
Well, you're both wrong. Time and time again, it has been proven by me directly that people don't like they like those one-off things, but people really just want like the standard issue thing they love. They'd rather have the standard issue thing they love than the one-off thing that's kind of interesting, which is eternally frustrating to me. But what can you do? The point being is, I will give Punk Rock Bowling some points for the spiciness here. Linville Golding doing also, of course, they can't do specials now because Terry Hall is dead, RIP. So Linville Golding, backed by the Acolytes, doing all specials on the rooftop deck. And if you've ever been on the Citrus, what's it called? Citrus Grand Pool deck, it's pretty cool. It's about 6 or 7 stories up. You look out, you see the entire old Vegas strip. There's a pool there filled with hundreds of gross punks. There's people walking around, tiki bar style drinks. There's two stages, and it's such a not weird is the wrong word. It's such a unique scene, and it's so much fun. So I'm really looking forward to that. And hats off to Punk Rock Bowling for putting a little bit of spiciness in there. So that's kind of cool.
So the gross punks in the pool is also very spicy.
It's spicy. I Sam, how much would you have to get paid to jump in the punk rock bowling pool? How like, literally, how much money would you have to get paid to do that and stay in there for 10 minutes?
I'm not doing it because I didn't even do it at the fest pool.
But like some guy comes over and he's like not a pervert, he's just a weird guy, and he's like, Sam, I want you to jump in the pool. How much money would he have to pay you?
He's gonna have to buy me a house in Brooklyn in the location I live in. So let's say $1.8 million.
I think for me, like no joke, like if some guy says, John, you got to jump in the pool with the nasty punks, I'm saying a grand, like for real, like for real, real. You know what I mean? Like it's really gross in there. People, I see a lot of people taking beers in there, but I don't see anybody getting out going to the bathroom, if you know what I'm saying. And what would you have to get paid to jump in that pool? I mean, you haven't seen it, I don't think, but what would you have to get paid?
I haven't. Well, okay, I've seen pictures online of like, I don't know if it's this pool specifically, but I've seen
But
punk
actually,
rock bowling pool
and
parties
that photo isn't
online.
even representative because they usually show like attractive women and maybe some handsome guys. It's a bunch of 45-year-old dudes who have been watching a lot of D4. That's what I'm saying. You know.
In punk vests.
Yeah.
Oh, true. Yeah, like that's the first time some of the vests are seeing water. Ooh, okay. I'm
You gotta
going
jump in for 10
to,
minutes.
for 10 minutes, I'm gonna
Yes.
say really high. I'm gonna say, yeah, you know what? Give me a solid $5 million because I probably
Fuck.
have an open wound somewhere that will like
It's gonna get infected, and you might have to amputate it a leg.
Well,
I need the money for the
the punk rock bowling lineup, it's okay. It's cool. I'm still going, although I haven't bought my plane ticket yet, but I will. But it's cool, man. Linville Golden looks cool. Adverts looks real cool. I wish it wasn't against Lee Fields. I would have loved to see Lee Fields. But what can you do? And play song. We'll come back and we'll do a little bit more news. We're running long, but listen, it's been a little while since all three of us have been rapping and snapping. But I know Sam's got to go to bed. So we'll do a little bit more news and then we'll get on out. But Em, what's the tune you're going to play?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I had an interview come out today with Aki McCullough, who you might know from her time in Dreamwell, or A Cosmic Knowledge of Death, or running Newhouse Studios, or Vivid Illusion, or Necroplanet, or like a bunch of really cool bands. So she is releasing her debut solo album called I'll Be Clouds in the Morning and Rain in the Evening. And the most recent single from that is Phantom Cock. So we're gonna play that. Go read the interview and pre-order the album.
And we're back, and let's do a little bit more news. This was kind of saddening. So Jason Roeder kind of freaked out. I don't know if freaked out is the right word, but we'll use freaked out for lack of a better term. He deleted everything on his Instagram except for one post, and he said, "I'm no longer a touring musician, and I'm selling all my gear. If you want to buy it, send me a message." And then everyone's like, "Oh man, Jason of Sleep and Neurosis." Actually, I think he's one of the original Neurosis guys. And if he's not an original Neurosis guy, he's a super long running Neurosis guy. And then like the next day, the day after this news broke, he's like, "No, actually, I'm not quitting music, but I have been fired from Sleep by the manager. He just called me up and fired me, and I haven't talked to Al or Matt in a long time." And so, and he's like, and I really do want to be on the road, but for personal reasons, I can't. But if anyone wants to buy all my Sleep records, you can, and instant message me. And I did instant message him and made an offer, and I didn't hear back from him. And so, anyways, I'm very sad. Well, not very sad about this, but I am sad about this, man. I love Sleep. I think Sleep's an amazing band, and I realize that Jason is not the original drummer. He's like a third drummer technically, because it was the original drummer. Was it Hykus? Or give me a second. I can't remember the guy's name. I think it's Chris Hykus was the original drummer. Then it was the guy from Ohm, and now it's Jason Roeder. And I've seen Sleep with Jason, I think, three times, and it was absolutely, yeah, Chris Hykus was the drummer. No, I'm wrong. Yeah, Chris Hykus. I was very sad that he quit the band, or has been fired from the band. And I've seen Sleep three times, and they were absolutely mind-blowing, amazing every time. And I was kind of sad that for whatever reason, it seemed there's a big breakdown in Sleep. You would have thought that, if they really wanted to fire him, they would have called him up personally or something. But this is truly based on speculation, is and that we don't really know what's going on at all. Most people seem to be supportive of Jason online, but some people were actually like defending Al and Matt. So the question is, are you guys saddened by this? I'm gonna guess neither of you really care, because I think neither of you really care about Sleep. But also, who's in the right and who's in the wrong? Is it the end of Sleep? That's the questions.
I'm not sad by this because I don't listen to them. However, it does suck that someone gets kicked out of a band in circumstances like this, right?
And actually, I should interrupt you. I think I technically misspoke, Sam. Really, he's not kicked out of the band because he's like, if a manager can just call you up and fire you over the phone, it means you're not in the band. It means you're a contractor for the band. That was my misstatement. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so if he's a contract like by the band and he just does things because they need him, then that's it is what it is, right? I was like, that's you had a contract, you toured with them for one run, because we see this all the time. Like there's tons of bands that like they don't have a drummer, or they don't drummers are actually notoriously hard to find, by the way. So like so if that's the case, then it is what it is. The fact that he's selling off all of his stuff tells me that there's might be something more going on here than we all think. I don't know if this is a mental health thing. I don't know if this is he needs money for whatever reasons type of situation, because I've seen this case scenario a million times. Where people are just like, I'm done with music and I'm done. I think it's really hard to be done with music, especially if music runs through your body, in a way, or your eardrums. I don't know. But then again, there are some people that's like, they just never are in a band ever again. So if this is a mental health issue, I hope he gets better. I hope this is not, like a bigger thing than it is, and he's just getting rid of some stuff that he doesn't need. I hope that's the case, 'cause that's also a thing. Sometimes when you're a touring musician, you end up with, 15 guitars and you only have two hands, so maybe you don't need 15 guitars, you might just need two. Or maybe this is just me saying things. I don't know. Yeah, this sucks for you, John. I'm sorry.
I'm sad, man. Altogether, the band was pretty cool. I think, Sam, you're totally right in that. I think there's more to this than anybody knows, owing to the fact that he deleted his entire social media and was selling all his gear. I do think Sleep will be back around, but I think it'll be a while. And I think a part of it is maybe somewhat similar to Ween, in that Cisneros is definitely a weird guy, and Pike is definitely a weird guy. And so I don't know if they get along or they don't get along, but I think there's probably some kind of weird tension in there. I feel bad for Roeder because not only did Neurosis collapse due to no fault of his own, now Sleep kicked him out, and so he went from being in two of the most awesome heavy bands to being in none of the bands, you know. So that kind of sucks. So I think there's more to the story here, and I think it's kind of sad. I don't, and do you have any comments? Do you think it's the end of Sleep? Do you care about Sleep?
I am not a, well, I've never really given Sleep a fair shake, to be honest. But I agree with Sam. I think there's a lot more going on than we know. I don't think it's going to be the end of Sleep. I think they are going to come back somehow, or something's going to go on. I think they're going to continue, but I think there's going to be more stuff maybe come out in the future.
Well, there you have it. Let's see here. Julia of the Coat Hangers just put out a new single. It's called Julie and the Squeezettes because of all the members on Suicide Squeen. It's Julie of the Coat Hangers with Staz of Paranoids, Bonnie of Death Valley Girls, Ricky Sticks of 2-10s, and a bunch of other bands. And they covered Cue Cards by this band Link that apparently a lot of people know. I've never even heard of Link, frankly. So it's a cover. Do you guys think it's a one-off? And do you guys think that it's the end of the Coat Hangers? I do think it's the end of the Coat Hangers, and I wish that it wasn't. And I wish Julia—I mean, Julie's awesome. She's been on the podcast a couple of times. I wish she would put out something kind of really punky, frankly. But that being said, she does have her solo band, which is what's the name of that solo band?
Julia, Julia.
That's right. And so that record is cool. But I think it's the end of the Coat Hangers because Julie's in California. I think one member's in Boston. I think one is in Georgia. So I don't think we're going to see much Coat Hangers in the future, especially since it's been like 5 or 6 years since the last Coat Hangers record. So I don't know. And what do you think?
I think it's not the end of the coat hangers. I think they are going to do something in the future. I don't know if it's going to be the near future per se, but I do think there is going to be something at one point or another. I don't think this is going to be a one-off. I think they're going to release maybe like a handful of singles, maybe an EP, maybe more covers. Like, I do think more is going to come out from this band. I had not heard of Link before, so I was kind of surprised. But I thought the cover they did was really good, and it'll be interesting to see what they do, if they do anything. Sam, what's your take?
I don't think that the coat hangers is done. I think that they might be in a unannounced hiatus for now. There's been so many cases of like bands just growing apart for a little bit because they're not proximity, like, they're not close together. Or they have stuff that they need to do. Maybe they're going back to school, some of them, maybe they're having families, I don't know. You can always do music later. So I don't think this is the last of them. This new super group, I do think that there's going to be more to come. I cannot imagine them just doing a cover and then being like, okay, that's it. That was fun. Usually when people do covers as a one-off, it's like, for a reason, like, a live aid type of or like charity work or something. So I do think that I agree with you, Em, that this might be like for an EPF some sort or just something. Maybe Suicide Squeeze is putting out something and this is going to be included in it. I don't know. But it just does not seem like it makes sense that this is a one-off to me. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell.
Time will tell indeed. I guess very last story, Devo is doing a 50 Years of De-Evolution tour continued last year, the year before. There was speculation that the band had ended, and then someone else said, no, the band hasn't ended. They're doing almost all of the USA. Will I go? Maybe. I love Devo. I saw Devo Punk Rock Bowling last year. They were awesome. And I saw my Punk Rock Bowling 2 years before that, and they were awesome. So depending on the price, that's depending on what I'll go. If it's $50, $60, $70, I'll go. If it's 300, I probably won't. Same. Do you like Devo? What do you stand on Devo?
Not a fan of Devo. I
How are
will
you not a
not.
fan of Devo, Sam? How are you not a fan of Devo?
I am so weird because I got into like a very specific type of rock. Because remember, you guys, all of you guys, I was really into pop music when I was a youth, and I got into punk like at a very specific blip of a world. And was literally listening to like orcore punk and hardcore like for a while. I've actually s sprouted into the metal now, so it is what it is. But I would have to say that they are if they were playing a festival and I was just so happens to be there for said festival, I would totally watch them. Like, that seems like something I would definitely watch them just for sheer enjoyment of checking them out. I don't really have an inkling to listen to Devo. I do see here that they're playing two dates in New York. One, the Radio City SNL 50 homecoming concert, and then they're coming to Brooklyn Paramount. Which is a fantastic venue, by the way. It's really, really large, but fantastic venue. So I'm excited for them for that because it is gorgeous in there. Yeah, I do think that this is going to be expensive, John. I think you're going to need to shell out some cash.
I think so.
Em, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be pretty dear. They're playing History in Toronto. That would be a really cool venue to see them in, 'cause like it's not huge, but it's not super small. Like it still feels intimate, but it holds quite a few people. I saw Bikini Kill there, and it was really just incredible. They have really good sound design and stuff. If I could like cover it for something and get in and have that be covered, that would be cool. But yeah, I have a sinking suspicion tickets are gonna be high.
Well, there you have it. M says Diva tickets will be high, and they probably will be. Sam and M and Sam, anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you want the listeners to know about before we shut tonight's episode on down? Is John whining about Punk Rock Bowling too much? It's really just 3 days of fun. And why are you getting so hung up on every minutiae detail of Punk Rock Bowling? Is that the correct take, Sam?
I don't think John is whining. I think John is just being John and concerned about his trip to Punk Rock Bowling because John would like to see Punk Rock Bowling do certain things for him and it's not happening right now. Does that make
Well
sense?
said. Well said. Indeed. Indeed. Indeed.
But I would have to say, John, get some insoles or orthotics because you're going to
Indeed.
be standing around for a while.
Honestly, good shoes are very important. And for whatever reason, like shoes are being made crappier now than ever. I think the past three pairs of sneakers I bought have actually been kind of crappy, and I never had that issue before. So get a good pair of sneaks, man, for sure. M,
Yeah.
any closing words?
When Record Store Day eventually does roll out the Snoopy campaign, remember Sam said it first.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I'm a knucklehead and I forgot to ask Sam what song she wanted to play. This is Sam's choice. It's Mannequin Pussy doing Loud Bark. We'll see you next week.